Hello, this is Les Brown, Mrs. Mamie Brown's baby boy, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show. Listen, continue to listen, and you'll discover your greatness.
Make your life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Well, hello again. It's David here, and it's a great Thursday. I'm still down in Phoenix, Arizona, where they're having a heat wave, so I think it's about 115 degrees here. So I'm not quite cooked, but I'm close. Like I mentioned the other day, you know, I'm down here right now. There's an event. We have about 8,000 people coming in, and Jack Canfield and John Gray and Paul Zane Pilzer are coming in, and so I get to share the stage with them, which is awesome. I really have a deep respect and deep love for John and Jack, so it's always great to work with people you love, as I'm sure it is for you. You know, I was thinking today, you know, what I was gonna share about, and I was just laying up on the pool deck, making some notes because I'm doing a three-hour training this afternoon for our leaders. And, you know, I was thinking about one of the things I could share, which is one of the things I teach in one of my programs, which really has completely changed my life. And it really goes back to when I was a young boy. And when I was a Cub Scout, and then I was a Boy Scout. And when I lived in Cyprus, I lived in Germany, I lived in England as a young boy. And what with the scouts, what we do is every year, we call it Bob a Job. For you English listeners, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. For the rest of the world, I think Australia, you know what it is. A Bob was a form of currency back when I was a lad. When I was a lad and Shep were a pup. So a Bob, it's like, I can't remember what it was, like sixpence or something like that. I'm sure that my father's going to correct me on that one. But Bob a Job. So the Boy Scouts would go out, tap on doors, and ask if there's any jobs that needed doing. And then you do the job, and they would give you a bob, and you'd fill out on your little card, and we'd raise money for the Boy Scouts. And I took this very seriously, and I always wanted to be the guy that raised the most money. And of course, you know, as years went on, a bob wasn't very, very much money. So, you know, sometimes you knock on a door, and they'd get you to mow the grass, cut the hedge, paint a fence, and they'd still give you a bob, which was horrendous. But, you know, I got better at understanding, you know, and maybe sometimes even talking about how much people would give me for a job beforehand, which was actually quite rare for someone young like I was. But truly, we'd just go and knock on doors. There was no parents with us. And then we'd be working in people's houses, in their gardens, and, you know, in their garages and everything else like that. Anyway, so this led on through my life as I started, you know, when we did fundraisers, I'd go and knock on doors. I had this muscle built of knocking on doors. And that went on to when I first left school at 15, and I started dabbled in business. And then I became a window cleaner. And really what I did was I went out with my car. And in fact, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who was going through a little bit of bad luck. And he lives in Canada. And him and I went for a cup of tea. And he was asking me what to do. You know, they needed some extra money. Their business wasn't doing well. And I said to him, I said, why don't you just become a window cleaner? You just go and knock on people's doors. You know, you need a ladder and a bucket. And I that's what I did. I went and knocked on doors. And I canvassed. When I first started, I only owned a motorbike, believe it or not. And I just did the village I lived in. And I realized that in the end, I was making so much more money than I was in my J-O-B, in my job. And it was cash. And I called my own shots. So at a very, very young age, I became this entrepreneur. And the muscle that I built, though, was this muscle of knocking on doors, this muscle of dealing with rejection, this muscle of when someone said no to me, I didn't turn it into a whole lot of other things. It simply was a no. Now, I'm not saying it wasn't hard. It certainly was. You know, when you receive 30 no's or 40 no's and 50 no's, and a lot of you in different kind of careers, some of you listening in are in network marketing, you know that you're going to receive a lot of no's, and we know that we often make those mean different things. And I've surveyed enough rooms and asked the question, you know, what do you make a no mean? And self often is like, I'm useless, you know, I'm a bad person, people don't like me, you know, I'm a loser. I mean, really, and I've polled thousands of people on that question, what do you make a no mean? And I want you to think about this, because imagine if you, from this one 30-minute podcast, you were able to come out with a strategy of where you can start saying, well, look what I do. Every time I hear a no, somehow it pulls the rug from beneath my dream. Somehow it stops me or pushes me back. And somehow my mind is able to turn a simple no into meaning all kinds of negative things about myself. The other surveys I've done is whether, you know, what certain persons have said no, especially for those network marketers who are listening in, you know, when it's your mother or your brother or your sister or your best friend that says no to you, the opportunity that you want to share with them, how hurtful it seems to be and how you carry that darkness and that upset internally, and that in itself often will steal your dreams. I mean, it's this crazy, crazy thing. Whereas, you know, I mean, if you ask someone to do something and they don't want to do it, they say, no, it's just not really for me. Imagine you were able to turn that around and not take it personally. And this is a muscle that I was able to build over many, many years. And when I started window cleaning, I started off with one small village, and then I went to two, and then three, and then four. And before long, I had about 19 different villages. And in the beginning, I knocked on every single door because I didn't know. And after a while, I realized that certain properties, you know, had a better return. So if I was doing a council estate, which is like one of the same house, one after the other, where a lot of people lived who had low incomes, I didn't make as much as doing the local pub. I didn't make as much as doing the, you know, one of the businesses in town, or doing a manor house that was owned by a very wealthy person. So I became selective over time, but in the beginning, I couldn't be selective. In the beginning, I just had to build the muscle. I had to go out there and perfect what I was saying, what I was selling, right? And what I was selling was for me to come around once a month, clean windows, and you know, do an exceptional job. And what happens is when you start to do an exceptional job, people start to trust you. And then people started asking me about, well, what else can you, you know, do you know anyone who can sweep chimneys? So I started a chimney sweeping round, which was a really funny story. You may have heard on another podcast, you know, and I started landscape gardening, and I started painting and decorating, all these jobs, and I started hiring people. And that's really how I got into business for myself. But it started with the ability to knock on people's doors and deal with, especially in the beginning, because there's that great saying I use often on the show, every master was once a disaster. Every master was once a disaster. So when you start anything in the beginning, you're pathetic at it. Oh, I was. You know, and most people won't practice. Most people simply won't practice and won't take the time to get good at something. So, you know, imagine I was going to go out and talk about window cleaning. Imagine I practiced 100 times before I spoke to the first person. Typically, it's not like that. Typically, we go knock on a door. And what happens is, you know, we're not very good, we're not very congruent, we don't know what to say. So our congruency, and when we start to understand how the brain works, the subconscious mind is processing 400 billion bits of information every second. 400 billion with a B. Our conscious mind is about 2,000 bits a second. So what happens is, you know, you get that feeling with people. You're talking to someone. You don't know why you got the heebie-jeebies. You don't know why you feel uncomfortable, but there's just this feeling. Well, what it is our subconscious mind is picking up on all those subconscious cues and all that hidden body language and all of that, you know, the nuances of tone, the belief that they have in what they're saying. So when we start out new at anything, in the beginning, we don't believe because we're questioning our ability to deliver the information. And I certainly was. I'd question myself. So when I first went out, you know, it was terrible. I didn't know what to say. And then so, but the secret is to then go to the next door, knock on that next door and simply say, hey, and practice again, and then practice again. Now you can practice on your own. I didn't realize the art of practice back then. I thought I had to do it in the real world. And a lot of people, they do the same thing. They go out there, especially you network marketers, you go out there and you start talking to someone, and instead of using the tools and leveraging the tools and telling the truth, remember my favorite saying, tell the truth all the time with compassion. When I wrote that saying, half of that came from Randy Pausch. And Randy Pausch wrote the book, The Last Lecture. And he just said, tell the truth all the time. That was his six most favorite words. I added with compassion because I realized telling the truth isn't enough. Sometimes you just need to be really compassionate how we deliver truth. So, you know, so here we are then. We're going out. We if we don't use the law of practice, if we don't take that time, we go out there, we're incongruent. We're not in alignment with our words, our voice, and our belief system. So someone's, you're talking to them, and they get this kind of heebie-jeebie feeling, right? So instead of just taking that on and saying, okay, great. If I do this, if I always ask people, I say, do you want to be 100% better? They say, yeah. I said, well, practice that 100 times. If you want to be 1,000% better, practice it 1,000 times. And that's what I do a lot of my programs is I get people to practice something over and over and over again until they start to master it using the wonderful saying I have, which is every master was once a disaster, including me. I was a disaster at everything, you know, and still am. I mean, this podcast is pretty young. I'm only into my third month or so. And so it's still, hopefully it's going to get better and better. We have a great idea for next week where we're going to start adding some elements to it, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Some of you like it, some of you don't, and that's fine. You know, it's fine. I'm not out to please everyone, and but I want to stay on topic here because I know it's very easy for me to get off topic because that's my nature. But this whole idea then of how do you become a master? How can you become so strong and build the muscle that is required to get better at something when you're engaging with other people, whether you're in sales, it doesn't matter what you're doing in life. If you've got a vision, a dream, or anything, in the end, you have to articulate it. You have to be able to orate it. You have to be able to stand in front of people, and they have to believe and buy into what you're saying. And that belief comes from that sort of subconscious connection. Imagine 400 billion. Imagine a great big circle around you that is amassed of 400 billion bits of information and meeting the other person's 400 billion bits of information. That's long before there's any connection of communication and that sort of that logical mind. Imagine those two people, and you just get that kind of weird feeling. Now you kind of understand where that weird feeling comes from when you start to get a read on people. That's why I believe kids a lot when they talk about it. But I want to tell you a story. This story changed my life. And what it was, my two sons, I realized that Calvin and Ben are their names. I realized that one of the greatest gifts I could give them is the ability to deal with the word no and to stop making it mean something it doesn't mean. And so I wanted to get them knocking on doors early. So this is a couple, 3 years ago, and it's in one of my CD series. I can't remember which one it's in now. I think it's in Journey to the Stage. I tell this story deeply. But the idea was that the school had raised about $1,500 the previous year for, that's the entire school, for the Heart and Stroke Foundation. And so I sat down with the boys and I said, okay, what kind of goal do you want to set? And I didn't tell them what had been done before. I just said, well, how much should we raise? How much do you want to raise each? And Ben had said 600 and Calvin had said 500. Anyway, this one particular week, Ben is not feeling very well. And I said to Cal, I said, Cal, you know what? If we're going to get this done, we better go out and knock on some doors. And he's kind of like dragging his butt. He's like, oh, Dad, I don't know. I said, well, come on, let's go and do a few. He said, I'll do five. I said, all right, five's fine. Anyway, so we go out and we live on a we lived in an area downtown, and the street over from us was right on the lake, and it's just really, really beautiful homes, and it's kind of affluent. So I said to him, you know, teach him a few things. He said, why don't you go where people have money initially, because obviously it's a little easier for them, you know, it obviously makes sense to go to that sort of area. And then what we did is we filled out on the top of his form a couple I put on there, and I put, instead of putting $5 or $1 or 50 cents, the first couple, we had people who really loved the and were passionate about what he was doing, so we put 25 bucks and 50 bucks, just to set an example that people didn't have to give a dollar, right, because that's what they see. So I teach them a couple of tricks. But the idea is when I take my kids out is I don't want the adults to see me. So what I do is I take my sons out and I'll let them knock on the door and I'll hide behind the bushes somewhere, or I just walk to the next house and I just stay out of sight. And then my son practices, listen to the word, practices what he's going to say. And I'd go through that with him 30 times or 40 times. I say it again and they'd get, Dad, I know it. Dad, I know it. I say, I know, but just do it another time. And so they kind of practice what they were saying so that they had a sort of an idea. And then they knew exactly how to hold the form so they can see what people have given before and, you know, that whole thing. So anyway, so we take him out. I take Calvin out. And he does his five, and he says, all right, let's go home. And I says, Cal, I said, what about we do one more? I said, you never know what's going to happen if you do one more. And he's like, Dad, I said five. And I said, all right. And Calvin and I are a bit like that. You know, we knock heads sometimes. And I'm like, oh, God, it'd be so good if you could just do one more and learn this principle of one more. You know, when you think you're done, do one more rep, one more anything, and it's going to change everything in your life. One more, right? Anyway, so I'm walking along with this kind of on this really beautiful street. There's this one old house, and it looks completely out of place. It's got this kind of weird tiles on the roof, and it's got in the window, there's like 60 post-it notes, little yellow ones, all on those stuck to the window, which looked odd. And the grass was long, and in the middle of the grass was kind of this guinea pig that was sort of in a sort of upside down basket that you use in a supermarket, like a little cage. And I said to him, I said, Cal, I said, why don't you go and knock on that door and said, maybe they'll let you hold the guinea pig. And he's like, that's a good idea. And he gets it, right? And so I hoodwink, trick him into that. He goes and knocks the door, hide around the corner. But he's gone in there for like 10, 15 minutes. And I'm starting to get worried now because he's in there so long. And it's kind of an odd house anyway. And just when I'm about to sort of go and kick the door in and do my sort of SAS roll through the living room, all right? And you got to understand, at the time, my son was probably, what would he have been? He would have been about 11, 10. No, was he 14? No, he would have been 10. Anyway, so he walks out. And as he walks out, I'm kind of just walking around the corner from the hedge. And he goes, yeah. He does that kind of fist pump that you see on Home Alone. Yeah. And I'm like, what? He said, he gave me $60. I said, what? $60? How come? He said his wife had died of heart disease. Really? Anyways, we walk in, and he kind of gets the principle about one more. You know, I don't mention anything else to him, but he walks in, he's like, and Ben's sitting there, he's not feeling very well. He said, I got $60. And then so Ben's like, he says, Dad. I said, what? He says, can we go to that house as well? I says, no. Anyway, so the next Saturday, we're out, and we go on the same street from where Cal had been, and we go all the way down. It's a long, 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 long street in Kelowna, British Columbia. It's called Abbott Street. We go all the way down Abbott Street, and they're both going to each side of the road. I'm staying out of the way. I'm hiding out. And finally, that was the room cleaner just came in. And finally, Calvin gets to his goal, and he phones and gets a ride home. I'm still out there with, and it's a hot, hot, hot day. And, you know, Ben is, I'm sweating, and I'm starting to think, it'd be nice to stop right now. I'm saying, Ben, are you sure you want to carry on? He's like, yeah, Dad, yeah, I want to carry on. I want to get it done. I'm all right. And my head, I'm thinking, oh, gosh. And suddenly he goes around a corner, knocks on the door. I can't see him. And I hear the door slam, and he comes around the corner, crocodile tears flowing down his face, just crying, big, big tears. And Ben's really, really, like me, I cry at car commercials for tires. I mean, I got this real big, easy cry button in my eyes, right? Anyway, he's wiping it off, and he's got black marks all over his face. And I said, what's up? He said, he told me to get lost, and he slammed the door in my face. And I'm like, and I look at him, and I don't know quite what to do in the second, but I look at him, and I give him a moment, because I always believe it's important to feel what's going on. Don't deny the feeling. Feel it all. You don't have to carry on with it. You don't have to keep it, but you've got to feel it first. And so I give him a second of cry. I says, Ben, can I ask you a question? He said, what? I said, imagine if that guy's wife had just died, or something really bad had happened in his family today that we don't know about. I said, I almost guarantee that it's got nothing to do with you. I mean, who's going to be mean to a little kid knocking on a door? I said, there's got to be something about him. I mean, there's got to be something going on for him. And he's like, I said, he says, oh, I never thought of that. I said, what do you want to do? He's like, go next door. So anyway, so he did, and he hits his goal, $600 that day, and, you know, $1,100 between the two of them. Big, big story for me. And because I start thinking about it, is that my son has the ability and the capacity to take that, feel it, and move through it, and don't hold on to it. He didn't hold on to it to the next house. He still looked a little grubby. I poured some water on his face and tried to wash it down a little bit. And that's where I started to perfect something I call the happy dance. And the happy dance is something I did. I was in cold call selling for a long time, and I taught a lot of people cold call selling, you know. And I had the principles down. I said, you know, there's only 5 objections: no need, no time, no money, no hurry, no trust. No need, no time, no money, no hurry, no trust. No need, no time, no money, no hurry, no trust. So I kind of knew that, and I teach people about that, how to handle the objections of no need, no time, no money, no hurry, no trust. But that wasn't the big muscle. I mean, teaching people technique is one thing, but keeping people going from a no and an emphatic no or a nasty no or whatever it is, or even a slight no where you're feeling a little bit like it's the fourth one in a row where you start to make up stories in your head. It's just a no, remember. What we make it mean, I can't do it, I'm pathetic, I'm a loser, all these things, which I've polled thousands of people on, is up to us, right? So what I do is I teach people in my courses, I call it the happy dance, and we actually do it. So what we do is we practice giving a pitch or telling a story or whatever it is, and in network marketing is a story. You don't pitch people, you just share your story, right? So let's use that as an example. Let's say, hey, listen, is it all right if I share my story? And you ask people if they'd like to hear more information or like to, you know, whatever. And they say no. And I get them to practice saying it in a dirty way, in a harsh way, and whatever. And then we have them dance. Yeah, woohoo! And they dance. I know this sounds silly. This may sound silly to you. But I promise you this. Is it sillier for you to make it hard, be harsh on yourself, to steal your own dreams, to walk away from everything you want because someone said no to you and you made it mean something else? Is that sillier than dancing, creating a great energy, smiling, hooping and hollering, yeah, whoo, woo, ah, like that, and then stepping straight in to talking to somebody else, right? And that is a practice which I do and I did for years when I was cold call selling. And I remember I'd go and train groups. And I was training a friend of mine in Chilliwack, Brad Reed. His group, he used to sell advertising, which is a tough thing. Advertising is a tough sell. And what I'd do is I'd go into a town where he had a group of salespeople. I'd meet them. I'd say, I want to meet you at 7 a.m. for breakfast. And I would ask them over breakfast to share with me what their product was. And I'd say, I'll meet you for lunch. And I would go out and during breakfast and lunch, first time out, and I would outperform every single person in the sales team because I would just keep going. And I would always get sales in that thing. I would start generating leads because it doesn't have to be a yes. It wasn't that. It was just the idea of knocking on doors, not taking it personally, building rapport. Remember, people buy from people they like and trust, right? So, and by the way, this isn't just about selling. If you guys are listening right now, you think if you've been dancing, or you were a young man, you went on a dance floor, and a girl turned around to you and said, no, yeah, I don't want to dance with you, loser. That's not what they said. That's what you made it mean. I can't tell you how many men have stopped dancing because of that experience, and they carry it for their whole lives. So this isn't about selling or anything else like that. This is about turning no's into what they really are. I mean, and if someone's nasty, let me put it in perspective to you. I ask this question a lot in my programs. I ask people, you know, what do you do when a telemarketer calls your home? And I can't tell you how many, the whole room goes, oh, yeah, woo. I said, what do you like? And people are nasty. They hang up. They're rude. They get all these different things. And people are proud of it. I can't tell you the energy shift in the room. People are like, yeah, that was blah, blah. And they're like really nasty. And I said, okay, stop for a second. I said, I want you to imagine that telemarketer is a young kid who's putting himself through school. And it's the job they have. They have to make 60 calls in a day, and they phone you. And you're nasty, you're belligerent, you're rude, you're short-tempered. And I said, well, imagine if it's a single mom putting her kids through school, and you're nasty, and she's got to make that money. Or maybe it's a mom whose kid is sick, and she needs medicine. I mean, these people who do telemarketing, you know, often it's a job that they have to have because they have no other choices. And so what I do is I practice this karmic rule of what goes around comes around, all right, is that when someone phones me, obviously I have a choice to pick up, and typically you can tell if it's a telemarketer, if I have time, I'll take the call, and typically I'll interrupt them after a few minutes. I say, hey, listen, I won't tell you the truth here. I'm really, really busy. I'm heading out. I don't have time to really listen to you right now, but I want to congratulate you for doing this. I know how tough it is, and I want to thank you for phoning me, and I really want to wish you luck. And I want to say, you know, you're doing great. And sometimes I say, can I give you a bit of coaching? And they'll say, yeah. I said, you know, it sounds like you're reading that. And what I do is I practice it about another 30 times real quick and see if you can let go of the script. Because it just sounds a little bit impersonal. And maybe ask me a question right off the bat, right? And I'll just give them a little coaching if I can. And if not, I just leave them with a really positive hi. Because I think of that karmic rule. And so many of you who are listening in right now want things in your life. And all you got to do is go knock on doors. It doesn't matter if you're selling a CD. It doesn't matter if your dream is to getting a job. Here's a great example. You know, let's say you want a job in a specific field. I always say when people are unemployed. So if you're unemployed, listen to this. And you want to do something in life. Go knock on doors. Knock on doors of every single person in your city and do it. Treat it like a job. Getting a job should be treated like a job. And how do I know that? Well, I backpacked for 10 and a half years. And the day I landed in a country, I was not allowed to spend any money until I had some work and somewhere to live. What I do? I go knock on doors. And I would decide where I wanted to live. And this happened to me in France. I mean, and this is when I was actually making money. And this is after my backpacking. But I opened a company in France. And we had an office on the Champs-Élysées. But we had our warehouse up in Le Havre, which is up in the north of France. Well, not the north, but it's where the ferries go out to England, right? And I wanted to live on this one street because it overlooked the ocean. It was gorgeous. And I drove around the city, decided where, and I started one end. I knocked on every single door in that street just to ask. I said, hey, you guys renting a room? I was only there for a few months. And you know what? About the 11th house, this guy said, come in. And he showed me. He said, we're just finishing a suite, brand new suite with windows overlooking the ocean. He said, it'll be finished in 3 or 4 days. Do you want it? He said, you seem so nice. And I lived there. I mean, we had it for about a year because I went backwards and forwards. What I do, I knocked on doors. It doesn't matter what you want. If you want to get a job in radio, if you knock on every single door. Now, today, you don't have to physically knock on doors. You can do it through the internet. You can do it through everything. But if we spend 8 hours every single day, or 10 hours every single day, pursuing the things we love and not taking any no personally, and really turning it into doing the happy dance, which is what I used to do. I'd come out and go, yeah! And I'll finish with a story. A friend of mine, Steve Munn, he's in network marketing, and he lives in New York. And I said to him, and he's a quiet-mannered guy. He's probably listening to this because I know he listens in. And him and his beautiful wife, Shannon, they live up in that part of the world. And I said to him, he lives outside of New York, really. But anyway, I says, you know, why don't you do this, Steve? I said, why don't you collect 100 no's in one day? See how you do. See how you feel. See how it changes you inside. And he went out with a mindset of getting 100 no's. And he got to 70. But, you know, so people would say no to him and ask him questions. And he deliberately was saying things to try and get no's just to toughen his spirit up, right? And so they'd say no, and he'd go, yes. And one guy's like, what are you doing? And he looks at me and says, oh, he says, I make money every time I get a no, right? Because he knows the principle that every no takes you one closer to a yes, right? And you've just got to go through that. And what I realized when I look at the story of Calvin, you know, that one, that $60 from him taking that one extra tap on the door. Now, I tricked him into it, but he's only young. How did he know? But, you know, for me, when I was out selling, I would keep going. If I was having a bad day, right, I would keep my energy high by doing my happy dance, coming out, letting it go, right? And knowing that not everyone's going to say yes right away. And often it takes 7 times of visiting people, of connecting with them before they want to say yes to you anyway. That's another principle. So you're just building rapport. You're not taking anything personally. And what I always said, I used to teach this to my salespeople. And this is one of the big things in life. Is imagine every single time that you go into a situation, every time you go into a, if you're selling, it doesn't matter if you're trying to get a job, it doesn't matter where you're using this principle, because it works in every area of life. It doesn't matter what it is, whatever you want in life, in the end, you're going to go and have to ask someone for it, or you're going to have to wait to see if it falls in your lap. And I promise you, I've meditated my whole life, and I've never meditated and a bag of money fell in my lap. Never did. If I wanted to make it work, I had to get off my ass and go make it work. I had to kick some ass out there. And so, you know, this whole idea then of as we step into this elegant way of being, when we step into this understanding that whatever we want is out there waiting for us, and that we have to have the courage to go step into and decide what it is we want, and then chase it down with this vigor. And this relationship with the word no, this relationship, it's like a kindred word. It's something that is, it has no power, zero power whatsoever. And one of the things I suggest you do is relive some of the most hurtful no's you've had. And it could be for a business, it could be a girl you've asked, and maybe you asked someone to marry you and they said no, and you're still holding on to that crap, right? Here's the idea, relive it. Crank some music up in your living room and dance it off and go, no, 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 and dance like a crazy person. Now, I have whole rooms doing this, and I can't tell you how many thousands of people have come up to me and thanked me because they feel that what they've done is they've let the energy go. And remember, when we hold on to anger, when we hold on to hurt, when we hold on to hatred, whatever we hold on to this negative, so you're holding on to resentment because somebody said no to you, it's a little like drinking poison and expecting them to die. Remember I said that again? It's like drinking poison, expecting them to die. So we have to learn to do the happy dance. We have to learn to pursue what we want by making no's what they really are is simply a no. Not no, not now. No, I'm not interested. That's all it is. All right? And we have to practice whatever we want to do. We have to practice, and we have to get out there and practice. Don't take anything personally and keep going. And remember, just when you think you want to quit, go knock on one more door. ask one more person. Do not quit. If there's something you want in life, if whatever it is right now, go speak to 1,000 people until you get it. Speak to 100,000 people until you get it. And I promise you, and this has happened every single time in my life, when I get clear on what I want, when I don't accept no as a no and I don't take anything personally, when I keep my spirits up high and my positive energy out there, I go for it. I tell you what, great things happen. So get out there, have a kick-ass day, and I want to thank you for being on that kick-ass life. And don't forget, share this with 5 friends. Share this with 5 friends. Imagine what we'll do if all of your friends start knowing that they can come here twice a week and enjoy this. And don't forget, please, 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 begging, please, can you go on iTunes and leave a review? I don't mind if they're good or bad. It doesn't matter. Just leave a review. Some of you don't like what me personally. I don't mind. You know what? That's not the problem. You're obviously listening. You like some of the guests. Great. You have to like me, but the reviews really help. If you're liking it, leave a great review because other people will come. Hey, have a great one. Goodbye from Phoenix.
That was kick-ass.